got a dead woman in Whitechapel. You ready to head out your first murder?
Absolutely.
The I Chandler.
Yes, Miles. You worked a murder scene before?
I think the killer knelt by her head, then cut her throat left to right with his right hand.
The man who killed your lady was copying Jack the Ripper.
The man who's attacking these women in 2008 is his biggest fan. We have a copycat.
Detach yourself.
And if another woman dies?
Then we never had this conversation.
Congratulations, you were right. So all you got to do now is solve the unsolvable and catch the most famous serial killer that ever lived.
Sharp-suited 30-something D.I. Joe Chandler strides alongside an office window overlooking the Thames and St. Paul's. A flash of a figure with a knife. Rupert Penry Jones. A poster reads, Murder, Reward. The corpse of a woman with gruesome wounds and lacerations. Phil Davis. A bloody knife, a Ziploc bag, a murder victim. Steve Pemberton. Written by Ben Court and Caroline Ipp. Produced by Marcus Wilson. The shadow of a figure moves along a brick wall. Clean-shaven, mousy-haired Chandler approaches a woman at a desk.
I'm here to see the commander.
Directed by S.J. Clarkson, Chandler sits opposite the commander and two other high-ranking officers.
The murder of Alice Graves is an exact recreation of the murder of Annie Chapman. Alice Graves was found in a backyard with her throat cut and body horribly mutilated, just like that of Annie Chapman in 1888. It was virtually identical, down to the date, the time, the things left at her feet, the envelope nearby. The pathologist was sure that whoever did this had no specialist medical knowledge. He can handle a knife and the gore, but he's an amateur working from old coroner's reports of the Ripper's victims.
I think we get the picture, Inspector. If he is copying Jack the Ripper, as you say, then we can expect three more murders.
Not if we can stop him.
When did you identify this pattern?
8 days ago.
And Alice Graves died when?
Yesterday morning.
Chandler swallows.
If you knew a murder was going to happen, we should have been told.
The grey-haired commander stares at Chandler.
It was only a theory up until yesterday. I didn't have any proof.
The commander wears an inscrutable expression. Chandler heads down the corridor.
Joe, wait.
Carrying a briefcase, Chandler turns.
At least I know where I stand with you.
I'm protecting you, Joe. You've no idea how much pressure I'm under to replace you with a more senior officer.
So replace me. And when I'm debriefed, don't expect me to lie about what you knew and when you knew it.
Fine. Stay on it. But don't come knocking on my door once the press get hold of the story. My obligation to you ends when it hits the headlines. Good luck, Joe.
The immaculately uniformed police commander strolls back towards his office. Whitechapel. Chandler enters the incident room, which is a hive of activity.
Okay, everyone, attention! Over here we have salmon sandwiches made with wholemeal bread, fresh fruit, nuts, juice. Brain food, gentlemen. In the bin.
Forbidden food.
It'll help you concentrate and give you stamina. Bin.
Give me wind.
Everything gives you wind.
Research.
Chandler proffers a book. D.S. Miles puts his hands up. Chandler gives it to Fitz.
Read them carefully. Looking for anything that helps us get inside the killer's head. One of these books is his Bible.
I can't remember the last time I read a book.
Right, well, you can have the DVDs.
342 pages.
You can claim overtime for that, Fitz.
What do we know about Alice Graves?
She was 36 years old. She had three children, separated, and she was an alcoholic, and this one was definitely on the game.
Right, well, she was badly bruised around the face sometime before she was killed. Find out who did that and what it was about.
Well, Sarah Smith, the time we found the body, she must know something. We've got to appeal for witnesses, broaden the inquiry.
You can go on TV, sir.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I could go.
No! There are three murders to go. We can't let the press get hold of that. It'll create panic. We'll have every crackpot and halfway earning up to being Jack, and the Home Office will put enormous pressure on us.
You don't know that'll happen.
I do know that. History tells us so.
I know what happens next.
He stands.
I'll go and get some proper food.
Get my bit, you're all back.
Night. A shadowy figure walks a darkened alley. As a peroxide blonde prostitute climbs into a car with a punter, one of two other working girls steps forward on the pavement.
Keep your phone on. Any trouble, call me straight away. She'll be all right.
The car pulls away and another approaches. The hooker who showed concern for her friend spots the car.
I'll take this one.
Wearing a short denim skirt, knee-high boots and a leather jacket with a fur-trimmed hood, the brunette approaches the now stationary vehicle. She peers through the driver's window, her pretty face reflected in the glass. The window glides down to reveal silver-haired rat-like Miles.
How's tricks?
No. Seem better?
I'll buy you a coffee and tell me about it.
Greenish light emanates from the windows of tall office buildings. Daybreak's illuminating the tall, bullet-shaped Gherkin building. Miles, early 50s, strolls into the station with his coat slung over one shoulder.
Fitz, get the Succo file on Alice Groves. We're up. Sir, can I have a word?
Sure.
They enter Chandler's office, where he grabs a hardback from his desk.
By the way, saved a book for you. Jill the Ripper.
Truly. Look, I had a word with Sarah Smith last night. The Tom who found the body. She's very jumpy. She said all the girls are. But there's a regular, a soldier, who's been beating the girls up and threatening to gut them. And get this, he carries a bayonet.
Did Sarah Smith give you a name?
No. They call him the Squaddy. He's always boasting about how he guards the Queen and all that. Sarah said he used to be all right, but he went out to Hellman Province and he ain't been the same since. He don't want sex anymore, just gets off on scaring them. Only the real desperate Toms will go with him. Fitz, you got that envelope?
Yeah.
A rubber-stamped envelope.
This was found beside the body of Alice Graves.
It's the regimental crest from the Household Division based at Clarence Barracks.
We got a prime suspect for you.
Chandler studies the crest stamp. They join two of the hookers outside Clarence Barracks.
The guards are on inspection at 3 p.m. There's no way Sarah would do anything official. This is the best I could manage.
It's the brunette.
Thanks for meeting us, girls. This is my colleague, Detective Inspector Chandler.
Ladies?
Shall we watch the show?
Squad! Shut!
Uniformed guardsmen perform a drill in a courtyard enclosed by iron gates. Miles holds a digital camera up between railings and views them on its screen.
Third from the right.
He takes a picture of a straight-backed guardsman and zooms in.
That's him. Isn't it?
The other woman nods.
It's definitely him.
The man stands in bold profile, the bayonet on his rifle pointed skywards. McCormack and Kent approach a doctor in a hospital reception area.
Excuse me? Do you see McCormack?
Oh, yes. I got your message. Hello.
Alice Graves. I pulled her file.
Come with me.
Oh, she went to the Larkin Trust.
Is that a hostel?
No. It's an organisation for women with alcohol problems.
That's a bit out of date, but the address is still good.
Yeah, we just need to know about her last admission to A&E.
She came in with facial injuries. Well, nothing serious. Some bruises sustained in a fight with a client. She was a prostitute, you know.
Does she know who the guy was?
She was so drunk when she came in, she could hardly speak. But she did say something about a soldier.
Kent and McCormack share a look.
Okay, good. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Wearing a trilby and Macintosh, Buchan joins Chandler in a pub.
Hello!
Chandler's seated.
This is unofficial, okay? Purely advisory.
Yes, absolutely. I'll be the very soul of discretion. My Watson to your homes, eh?
Buchan pats Chandler's knee and lets his hand rest there until Chandler shoots him an indignant look and hands him a photocopy of the envelope.
We found this at the scene. There's a portion of regimental crest on the envelope, which had been placed next to Alice Grace's body.
There was a torn envelope near Annie Chapman's body just like this one, but it was a red herring. It had nothing to do with Jack.
The first victim, Emma Jones, thought her attacker was a soldier. One of her wounds could have been caused by a bayonet. And now this regimental mark on the envelope, it all points to the killer being a soldier.
Consulting a book.
He's creating the world for you. The same murders, the same mysterious suspects, the same mysterious lines of inquiry. He wants you to think he's a soldier or a man in a leather apron, because if you're looking for them, you're not looking for him. He wants to make you his Inspector Abberline.
Buchan smirks.
A policeman who couldn't catch the Ripper.
The point of playing Jack the Ripper is to get away with it and never be found.
I can't believe this guy isn't leaving a trace. We're getting nothing from forensics. It's like he knows what we look for and how we find it. Or is it phantom?
Well, back then, the police were so desperate, they even considered photographing the eyes of the victims. They thought their dying retinas might have held an image of the killer. Could you imagine? A picture of Jack in the eyes of the dead.
A flash of a female victim's eyes, closed, then open. A knife is drawn. The eyes are closed. The woman, Alice Graves, is slid out of a mortuary drawer.
So, what could await?
I wanted to check her eyes.
We've gone over every inch of her skin already. There's nothing.
Not her eyelids, her eyes.
Blonde ponytailed Dr. Llewellyn looks at Alice's pale face. At the station.
That's off the peg.
And I?
Got two pairs of trousers, too, to even up the wear.
You look like the boss.
Oh, his suit's handmade. Savile Row.
Mine a Skid Row.
Your attention, please, ladies. Private John Leary. History of violence against women. He threatened a teenager with a knife in Germany, and he wounded a young woman in Aldershot. His regiment have dealt with everything up until now. They describe him as troubled. Now, his leaves don't tally exactly with the murders, but he's gone AWOL before now, so we can't rule him out. He's a very naughty boy. You get all that, boss?
Yes, I heard. Bring him in. We found the killer's DNA on Alice Graves, so we might as well get a sample from Leary.
What DNA? I thought the body was clean.
It was on her eyeballs.
How did it get there?
He wanted to leave his image on her dying eyes, so he licked them.
McCormack's mouth falls open. Chandler strolls away. Miles half watches him go as he turns his back to the others and stares thoughtfully at the floor. Miles and Chandler interview the squaddy.
Are you a regular client of prostitutes? John Leary.
Private. 24196034.
Right, did you know the prostitute Alice Graves?
John Leary. Private. 24196034.
Are you familiar with the crack house near Brick Lane where the body of Alice Graves was found?
John Leary.
Jesus Christ, you haven't been captured by a bloody enemy. This isn't Afghanistan and you're not the bloody SAS.
That's all we're going to get from him.
He's not obliged to say anything that may incriminate him.
Well, if he wants to play Guantanamo Bay, can we hood him and shock his bollocks until he feels chatty?
That's not funny, Detective.
Oh, really? I'm laughing.
You know the house. Did you bring Alice Graves there?
John Leary.
We know.
You used to beat her up. Was that not enough for you anymore?
John Leary, private.
24196034.
Private John Leary of the Queen's Foot Guard, based at Clarence Barracks, was arrested by police this afternoon and is being held on suspicion of murdering...
You're missing a trick. The peel on here could jog a few memories, turn up all kinds of witnesses.
We've had this through from forensics. Bayonet's clean. No blood traces at all.
Shit.
And the eyeball DNA's been contaminated. I've had to release Leary.
Leary's not in the clear yet. He just got lucky.
Miles is sour-faced. He strides into the incident room.
Boys, you skip?
Eyeball DNA's contaminated. Bayonet's clean.
Are you joking?
Oh, no.
What? Why is the Director of Forensic Science signing off on the evidence all of a sudden? Why is he getting involved in lab work?
That's unheard of. The Director doing lab work.
It's a cover-up.
Well,
the original Jack was a cover-up. In my 342-page book, the original Jack was a Masonic conspiracy to protect the Duke of Clarence. He had married a Catholic whore, and the other women were all witnesses at the wedding.
Who's the Duke of Clarence? Is that Charles?
Charles?
No. Listen. The whores were witnesses to a wedding the palace wanted to keep secret. So the palace had the girls killed. That was the conspiracy then.
So what's the conspiracy now?
Well, if you knew that, wouldn't be much of a conspiracy, would it?
But that's just one theory out of hundreds. My book says that Jack's a sailor, that he went off to live in Jamaica.
In my book, Jack's a woman.
Well, maybe, though. The palace has got something to hide.
Yeah, hold on a minute. Alice Graves used the support unit for Alkies, and guess who the patron was? Princess Diana.
Clutching an A4 photocopy.
You want a conspiracy? You want a wedding that's been covered up? This is the mother. Don't mess with the Masons.
Leary is a good suspect. We'll get the evidence on him because he did it. No one's covering anything up. So no more conspiracies, no more Masons, and no more scotch either.
He takes McCormack's bottle. The Whitechapel cityscape. Chandler lies in bed. He wakes and checks his watch on the bedside table. The screen on his mobile is lit up. He picks it up and takes the call.
Yes.
Turn on the news.
He points a remote at the TV.
Pattern to these murders. The tabloids are reporting that Jack the Ripper is back and killing women again in the East End of London. Sources also suggest that the police, already under fire for being slow to react to the case, are looking into a possible Masonic connection.
You have a leak. Sort it out.
If the killer is indeed a copycat, Jack, then the murder of Alice Graves is likely to be the second in a series of five planned attacks.
Chandler lies on his back with his hands behind his head. His 4x4 pulls into the station car park where Miles discards a spent cigarette. Chandler gets out.
You happy now?
What?
Well, someone has betrayed the whole investigation and compromised everything.
What are you insinuating?
You know.
I'm not the leak.
You wanted rid of me since this whole thing started.
You think I'd do that?
I'm staying until we get an arrest. So to hell with you and your dirty tricks.
Wait! I've been doing this job for 20 years. I have the trust and loyalty of my men. You think I'd throw that away for a long streak of piss like you? You'll screw this investigation up without my help. I will find your leak for you, and you will apologise. I like single malts, not that blended shit.
Miles stomps off. Chandler addresses the police team in the incident room.
Now that this is out in the open, we'll be inundated with false leads, false confessions and false alarms. Not to mention members of the public getting in our way. The press are offering money for information. They're trying to beat us to the ripper. The Home Office is under pressure, the Commissioner's under pressure, which means that we are under 24-hour scrutiny. We cannot make any mistakes, we cannot be fallible.
Fally-ho?
I know there's been a lot of talk about conspiracies and masons and cover-ups. I want it to stop now. We need to get back on track, which is why I've asked an impartial expert to come in and talk to you today. Mr. Buchan?
Oh, I'm not the ripperologist. Oh. You're out of your mind.
We need an objective view. A step back.
Oh, he's a step back, all right.
That's fine.
The besuited police team look on as he stands before them, as if on stage.
Should I just begin?
Yes, go ahead.
He pauses for thought.
Imagine. Whitechapel, 1888. A place so terrible that Jack London called it the Abyss.
Ed, the Masons.
Yes. Yes. There is no conspiracy. The Masonic conspiracy of Jack the Ripper is the biggest load of bunkum ever to taint true ripperology, based on a total disregard of the known facts of the case. Crying conspiracy is the last resort of an investigator. It's a way of saying it's not your fault you can't solve it.
He grinds his teeth.
Yeah, well, why did the director handle the evidence, huh?
Good point.
It was a favour to me, actually. I wanted the best.
Oi, eyes front.
Well, that doesn't explain the Larkin Trust.
Alice Graves. She used to go there.
So did Kathy Lane. I checked. May I,
Buchan points to a leaflet Fitz is holding, then puts his hand out.
God.
It's another myth that the canonical victims knew each other. And he'll be recreating pea supers for us next. Clever boy.
Fitz swipes the leaflet back with a smile. In plain clothes, Fitz, McCormack, Sanders and Kent play cards on Miles' patio as he fries steaks on a barbecue.
You don't have to keep turning them, let them cook for a bit.
Oi, I'm still in charge, you know?
Who's run out of beer?
Please, Fitz.
No, thank you.
McCormack studies his cards.
You found your pub in the country yet?
Yes, a lovely place in Sussex.
Don't come cheap.
Tell me about it. We're already remortgaged up to the hilt as it is.
Still, the money from the papers must help, right?
Seated, McCormack looks up at Miles, shares a look with Sanders and Kent, then narrows his eyes.
What is that what I'm about, is it?
I'm just saying. I understand why you did it. Can't live your dream on a pension, can you?
A few bob in my pocket and screw you guys.
Yeah, right.
I'm out of here.
Shut up. Where are you going?
He thinks I'm the leak. Thinks I sold you all out for a few grand.
That'll be daft. Come on, have a beer. They're on me. Since when?
Fitz's face drops.
Never see your wallet in the bar, do we?
Nice. Just a beer.
That's your guilty conscience, Fitz.
It's a beer.
Come on, Fitz, I can see it in your face. Tell us.
The others watch hawkishly as Fitz shakes his head. He bites his bottom lip.
I didn't do it for the money. I did it so we could get a new DI.
He uncaps a lager.
For you, Skip.
He proffers the bottle to Miles.
That's what you wanted, isn't it? Here.
Miles starts for the house.
I'm sorry. Hey, right!
Miles pats McCormack on the shoulder as he passes. Fitz sighs. In the pub with Chandler, Buchan pours over a case file.
Could I borrow this for further study? I'll return it in the morning.
Out of the question.
I understand. Absolutely.
He brings a hand to his chin.
The double event is imminent. The night Jack killed not one but two women in the space of 45 minutes. Catherine Eddowes was killed in Mitre Square, on the cobbles. It's the only murder site that still exists. You can go and stand on the exact same spot today. I think he'll definitely be tempted by that. It's so authentic.
There's CCTV in Mitre Square, and it's completely overlooked. He wouldn't be that stupid. He'd be caught in minutes. Game over.
Mitre Square's too important to miss. And he gets to take away her kidney.
He can't do it. It's impossible.
I definitely regard Mitre Square as a probable murder site.
All right. I'll keep an eye on it. But we're going to focus on Private Leary and watch every move he makes.
It's not Leary.
He fits the description of Emma Jones's attacker. And we know he assaulted Alice Graves before her murder. He's our prime suspect.
But then you have to ask yourself, will there be a double event or not?
What do you mean?
There's a growing body of thought, to which I happen to subscribe, that Jack was not responsible for both murders that night.
Well, I thought Elizabeth Stride and Catherine Eddowes were definite, canonical.
It's a recent theory, not mainstream. Liz Stride had her throat cut, but she wasn't mutilated. The classic Ripper theory goes that he must have been disturbed, so went and found another victim to sate himself. But...
he moves one seat closer to Chandler.
No signs of strangulation. The coroner found a great dissimilarity with the way her throat was cut and believed a different weapon was used. But no mutilation, different MO, different signature. Her death could have been a coincidence, erroneously linked to Jack.
So if it's a classic Ripper fan, he'll kill twice. If it's an alternative theorist, he'll kill once.
In essence, yes.
So which one is he?
Well, that's up to you, Joe.
You're the expert.
But it's your investigation.
Jesus. I mean, all I have is history.
He tidies loose documents.
I've got nothing tangible. Nothing right now. Right here to help me. I mean...
Growing red in the face, Chandler shuts his eyes and leans against the table to calm down. He sits up straight and his eyes rove in thought.
It was a dead woman in Whitechapel. A simple domestic. I wasn't... I'm not supposed to be doing this.
Dumpy middle-aged Buchan looks at Chandler with an air of compassion.
Look, my whole career has been mapped out by other people. I'm just trying to fast-track me on them.
Eyes lowered, he shakes his head, then meets Buchan's gaze.
I'm the wrong man for this job.
Buchan leans forward.
But if we catch this man tomorrow night, you will be the man who captured the Ripper. Forever.
Picking up his files.
No one catches the Ripper. History says so.
Chandler rises from his seat and walks out with his coat folded over one arm. Printed text reads Mitre Square, an image of victim Catherine Eddowes, a street map, a sharp knife. On Fitz's desk is a box with his name on it, into which a handful of files have been placed. Chandler enters with a bottle of single malt and sets it down in front of Miles on his desk, at which he sits with PCSO Mary Boosfield. Chandler goes into his office.
Have a good long look, Mary. Take your time.
None of them jump out at me. It was very dark. I only remember seeing the knife. I'm sorry.
Blocking Chandler's view, Miles draws closer to Mary and points at a photo of a lineup.
How about him?
Leary, tall, muscular and clean-shaven.
Ring any bells?
She eyes him suspiciously.
Maybe. It's possible. It could be him.
Good girl.
She scrutinises the photo as Miles strides into Chandler's office.
Mary's just picked out Leary. That's a positive ID from Mary and Sarah Smith.
Good. Let's go ahead with it then.
Highlighting a street on a map.
We need to catch Private Leary in the act. As we know, time's important to him. If he's our killer, he'll attempt the first murder at 1 a.m. tonight in Henrique Street.
Cormac, I want you there. Kent and Sanders, you'll be in Clarence Barracks. The MOD have agreed access to the ground so you can watch the accommodation block. I'll be out the front with the boss.
The second murder took place in Mitre Square at 1:45. There'll no doubt be a public presence of press and onlookers.
We'll have uniforms there, and Leary is under observation from now on.
Now remember, our objective is surveillance. We don't make a move until he does. This is it. No mistakes.
He goes. Miles nods to McCormack, Sanders and Kent, and they lean closer.
When we get Leary, let his nibs read him his rights. Give him his moment.
Sanders smiles weakly. A sullen Miles is at the wheel of a black cab parked by Clarence Barracks. Chandler's in the back seat. Reaching out,
touching me, touching. Could you turn that off, please?
Miles operates the stereo. Miles stares at Chandler in the rearview mirror. Two leggy prostitutes stroll past McCormack on the street.
All right, darling.
You take care of yourselves tonight, ladies.
He shakes his head and ambles on. Wearing a radio earpiece, Sanders keeps vigil by a gate. Kent stands at a street corner. He scans around.
All quiet here, sir.
Kent, only use the radio when something is happening.
Out.
Kent shuffles awkwardly. Chandler checks his watch. He scratches behind his left ear, then glances out of the window and sighs impatiently. Impassive, Miles stares ahead. Chandler leans forward as if about to speak. He hesitates to look back at the street.
We're right about Leary.
Yeah, we are right. It's the one thing you and I agree on.
Mitre Square, please give your situation report.
Mitre Square, north side, everything under control, over. All right?
Fine.
Mitre Square, all clear on south side, over.
McCormack, situation report.
Pissed off, cold, and very thirsty, sir.
Chandler casts his eyes about frustratedly and sighs. His shoulders sag and he massages his temples. He rubs his mouth and checks his watch again. Sanders spots Leary emerge onto high scaffolding outside the barracks. Leary tosses a bag down and mounts the scaffold.
Shit. We're up.
Suspect in military clothing.
He's coming down the scaffolding.
Rear of the barracks. Okay, all units, here we go.
Leary jumps a good 8 feet to the ground. Sanders ducks as Leary grabs the bag and jogs up the slope towards him. Emerging at a path by the railings, the soldier then turns left and runs alongside the barracks. Sanders' back is to a wall beneath the elevated railings.
Suspect is AWOL.
On the move. Heading towards you, Kent. He has a bag.
Kent hides.
Kent, have you got him in sight?
Leary's close to Kent.
Kent, have you got him in sight?
Oblivious, he passes by.
Training suspect on foot.
Kent follows Leary into a vaulted shelter supported by stone pillars at the rear of the barracks. Kent secretes himself behind a pillar as the suspect strides towards an arched exit. Kent emerges stealthily from his hiding place, but Leary is nowhere to be seen. Fresh-faced, curly-haired Kent edges along behind another pillar and looks out towards one of many exits.
Kent, situation report. For God's sake, Kent, can you see him?
Kent turns frantically, looking left and right into the shadows. He furrows his brow and turns to see Sanders approaching with his arms held wide. Kent shrugs helplessly, then turns to see Leary march past the open archways wearing a baseball cap.
Suspect is heading towards North Perimeter Wall near you, sir.
He's now wearing a baseball cap and a dark jacket.
Leary's shadow drifts along the white stone wall of the barracks as he strides to the street corner behind the detective's parked taxi. A saloon pulls up with two men in it, and Leary gets in.
He's got accomplices. It is a bloody conspiracy.
We're on the move. He's got into a dark car. Can't read the registration. Looks like there's two male
IC1s accompanying.
He must be headed for the kill.
The dark blue Mercedes drives off, and they pursue it in the taxi. A figure in a trilby and a Macintosh strides purposefully down a dimly lit alley with a leather satchel. A flash of a knife. The Merc turns a corner.
Tailing suspect heading west. All units stand by. This doesn't make any sense. We're going in the wrong direction. Motorcycle to east. What's he doing?
He knows we're here. He's trying to lose us.
Well, stick with him.
But what do you think I'm doing?
They're driving just a car's distance behind the Merc. It turns another corner and slows almost to a halt.
He's messing with us.
It accelerates again, and the pursuit continues around the winding labyrinthine streets.
What's he doing now? He's turning back.
Trailing suspect east. All units, stand by. Trailing suspect east.
The car hangs a right down a narrow back street and swerves left around a tight corner. Both cars halt. The doors of the Merc swing open and Leary strides towards the taxi with a confrontational gait.
What's going on?
What's he planning?
The two other men approach. Cameras flash.
Are you trying to frame Private Leary?
This is Mitre Square. We've had a disturbance. We have a
crime. The bloody press will be set up.
Tens of thousands of pounds. He's still not nearly catching the thing behind these murders.
There's a disturbance at Mitre Square. They say they've got the Ripper and no one's been killed.
The journalists snap more pictures as Chandler and Miles hurtle off in a taxi. Miles parks and Chandler leaps out of the vehicle. Uniformed coppers try to block his path, but he displays his ID and sprints on through a crowd of press photographers. Their cameras flash. He fights his way to a police van and flings open the rear doors to reveal a cowering Booken. Miles looks on in shock as Booken meets Chandler's gaze.
Joe! Thank God! Joe!
He clings to the cage enclosing him in the van. Chandler turns with a look of panic.
Is anybody in the square? Is anybody in the square?
He barges past a police constable and breaks into a run. In slow motion, Chandler stares through the railings as he races down a side street. Somebody lies motionless in the square. Miles follows. They round a corner and dart towards a gate cordoned off from the public by police tape. Miles and Chandler arrive at a body lying cloaked in shadow on the cobbles. Chandler drops to his haunches. A police badge on the body is splattered with blood. It bears a picture of a smiling female officer and the name Mary Boosfield.
It's Mary. He got Mary.
Miles steps into the light.
This is impossible. There's nobody here.
He looks at Chandler.
He ain't human. He can't be.
Chandler hangs his head and clutches at his hair in a state of turmoil. Text on scraps of paper. Mitre Square, Jack the Ripper. A photograph of Catherine Eddowes. A peephole on a cell door is opened to reveal Booken, who wears a sullen hangdog expression. The door opens, Chandler stands in the doorway.
Joe. Oh, thank God.
Chandler nods and Booken's released.
I didn't get their numbers, but I wish to lodge a complaint. Joe, I want to complain against the two gorillas who arrested me and threw me in the van. Mother will be in a terrible state wondering where I've got to.
They climb stairs.
Joe, do you think I could have my laces back?
Not yet, Mr. Booken.
They reach a landing where Miles waits with Sandler and another constable.
This way, Mr. Booken.
Oh, I see.
Grey-haired with a cleft chin, pug-faced Booken sits opposite Miles and Chandler in an interview room. Miles whispers in Chandler's ear, then turns.
Where were you at 1:30 a.m. this morning?
I was staking out the exact spot where Catherine Eddowes was murdered in 1888.
You were hiding from the police.
I wanted to catch the Ripper. I've been hunting him all my life, and now here he is again, made flesh. He is my nemesis. He's mine to bring to justice.
So that's why you wanted to help me? So you could get an inside track on the investigation for yourself?
I'm sorry, Joe.
Having committed the offence of obstruction to the police by entering a restricted area.
You were escorted from the square at 1:41 a.m.
By the gorillas, correct?
Was there anyone else in the actual square?
No. Look, I caused a bit of a ruckus, and I'm sorry about that, but he didn't even show up, so no harm done, eh?
At 1:45 a.m, the body of a woman was found in Mitre Square.
Body of a woman? That's impossible. He couldn't have. There was no time.
He had 4 minutes.
But
he... All he needed was a distraction, like the mini riot that you caused.
Me?
His beady eyes are wide open.
You think he used me?
You made it possible. His accomplice.
Booken turns to look at his brief, then blinks. Chandler glowers unforgivingly, and Booken wipes tears from his eyes.
I am Edward Booken. Respected authority on Jack the Ripper, I am not a killer. Nor do I serve one. How dare you?
Miles whispers in Chandler's ear again. Miles knocks on Booken's white front door. It's a terraced house. Chandler approaches. The door opens.
Mrs. Booken, police. We have a warrant to search yours and your son's premises. May I come in?
They step over the threshold past the elderly white-haired woman. Clocks of all shapes and sizes line the hallway. Chandler looks through a unit filled with letters.
He subscribes to Caravan International. Looks like he pays all his bills on time.
Yeah, of course he does. He's a saint.
And he's in a dispute with the council over a neighbour's plans for an extension. I mean, it's not really...
Well, where's all the Ripper stuff, then? I thought he was the world's foremost expert. What's he keep it all in his head?
Miles strolls into the hallway and regards a padlocked basement door as Buchan's mum makes tea.
Mrs. Buchan? Mrs. Buchan, what's down here?
Oh, that's my son's study. I haven't got a key.
Got a screwdriver?
He unscrews the lock.
Oh, very much.
He hands the screwdriver to Mrs. Buchan, opens the door and tugs on a light pull, illuminating the basement stairwell. He descends the stone steps, followed by Chandler. The bare brick walls are papered with writings and research materials.
Bloody hell.
Photocopied images of Ripper suspects are stuck to a wall. There are countless Jack the Ripper books. An old leaflet reads, Murder, £500 reward.
I knew it.
Chandler stands with his hands buried in his pockets as Miles dons spectacles and starts to examine the copious literature pinned to the wall. Chandler joins him.
It's like an incident room from 1888.
It's a killer's lair.
Miles picks up a photocopy of a police gazette. A passage has been marked with a highlighter pen and the word murder circled.
Look at all this.
He's a ripperologist. This is what he does for a living.
Miles reveals a computer displaying a web page.
He's even got his own website.
A modern Ripper newspaper clipping.
Look, this ain't from 1888.
He's been helping me with the investigation. This doesn't prove anything.
He's involved and I'll prove it. I've got a nose for this. You haven't, obviously.
At the mortuary, Llewellyn talks to Chandler and Miles through a pane of glass.
He cut her throat first. He's savage. Right through to the vertebrae.
The abdomen has been completely opened up. There's a stab wound in the liver. Genital mutilation. Colon's been cut away. And the kidney and uterus have been removed.
Exactly the same as Catherine Eddowes in 1888.
Well, however, when you come to her face, the injuries are completely different. There were V-shaped marks made on Catherine Eddowes, whereas here, well, he's clearly tried to slice Mary's face off.
In my experience, this kind of severe facial mutilation
strongly indicates a relationship between the killer and his victim. They may well have known each other.
Catherine Eddowes said she knew who the Ripper was and intended to collect the reward.
Mary Boothfield got a good look at Kathy Lane's killer.
And he got a good look at her too.
Bastard.
Fleeting glimpses of the killer's slender blade and wide-eyed Mary crouching over a body. At the station, an acetate of a Whitechapel street map is pinned to an interior window, behind which sits Kent, deep in concentration at a computer. Chandler enters behind him.
What have we got?
Okay, this is a CCTV from Mitre Square. It shows all eight cameras from both the north and south sides. Here on the south side is where they find Buchan hiding and make the arrest, taking him around the square to the north side. All the press and onlookers follow Buchan's arrest, leaving the south side clear. This creates a diversion for the killer to dump Mary's body. He enters the square through these shutters on the southeast corner and drags Mary's body into the square.
Jesus, we were minutes away.
The shutters here, they lead to an underground car park entered from Fenchurch Street. We're getting the tapes from the council.
He must have used a vehicle for his getaway. Excellent work.
Thank you, sir.
I've got the printouts from Buchan's message board. They work like this. Someone, Jack 2000 or Spring Hill, would write in with a question about the murders, like, was there a double event? Buchan gives some long-winded answer. Then somebody else writes in, Slasher Jack, with a different theory. Buchan replies, on and on and on it goes.
How many people are on the site?
About 100, but look at this. One name had a regular Q&A with her from Mr. Buchan, 50 times more than any other user. I told you I've got a nose for this.
Can computer crime trace this?
They could try, but look, the last contact was on the night of the first murder.
Chandler looks up from his desk, then lowers his eyes with a sigh to glance at documents.
I want you to do Buchan's interviews from now on.
Yes, sir.
I hope you're well.
Miles goes briskly from the office, leaving a melancholy Chandler alone with his thoughts. Wine is gulped, steak is cut and eaten. Chandler enters a gentleman's club where all but a hovering waiter are seated and dining. Chandler joins the commander and four high-ranking officers at a candlelit table.
You haven't shaved.
Sorry, sir, I haven't been home yet.
You look like a drowning man.
Thank you. Everything's under control.
There are a dozen others who'd like your place at this table. The least you could do is change your shirt.
Weary-eyed, Chandler looks away.
Why did you ask me?
I gave your late father my word. A place at the table.
Food arrives.
In time, the top of the force, but in the current climate, I have my own position to consider. I did warn you.
I understand. You need to take a step back, unless I catch the Ripper, in which case you'll be standing by my side.
The commander bristles.
Nobody asked you to sacrifice yourself. Work the shift. Go home. You have a sergeant. Use him. Let him shoulder it. And protect yourself enough so that when this is over, you still have some standing.
Do you even know their names?
Whose names?
The victims.
Your problem is you can't see that's irrelevant.
Mary Boosfield. He cut out her kidney and sliced her face off.
We are eating!
Chandler rises sharply and storms out, knocking a tray from a waiter's hands. The commander arches an eyebrow as the other high-ranking officers share awkward looks.
You apologize.
He tucks into his steak. McCormack sits in with Miles, who's interviewing Buchan. Miles shows McCormack a computer printout.
Where is Detective Inspector Chandler?
Busy.
Miles shuffles more printouts from Buchan's website, then pushes them across the table to him.
Ripper fan.
Buchan takes them.
Oh, the message boards. I don't have the slightest inkling as to who these people are.
But you're happy to discuss how to cut up women with them?
I simply relate the historical facts to them, and if necessary, correct their thinking.
Read it.
An inch below the crease of the thigh was a cut extending from the anterior spine of the ilium obliquely down the inner side of the left.
Left thigh, yes, yes. That is from the autopsy performed by Dr. Brown on Catherine Eddowes.
That is murder pornography.
This information is in the public domain. I don't tell them what to do with it.
Someone like Ripper Fan, who was so interested in your opinion of the double event and shared your belief that Catherine Eddowes was the only true victim of the Ripper that night.
I know what you're implying. You think he's the killer. You think I'm in it with him. Why would I do that?
Tell me about the marks on Catherine Eddowes' face.
Well, okay. The autopsy report states that she had distinctive marks to her face, like inverted V's on her cheeks, and the tip of her nose was cut off, as well as cuts to her eyelids. Some ripperologists think that these are Masonic markings.
But you got your own theory, right?
Well, yes, I do. I think he tried to cut Catherine's face off. You see, cutting down like so would cut the eyelids, remove the nose, and cut into the cheek. I can't be absolutely certain, but it does make sense.
Yeah, it does. It did to Ripper Fan. Because he did exactly what you told him to. And sliced Mary's face off. Ripper Fan's the killer, and you're his what? Mentor? Sounding board? Special advisor? You tell me.
Buchan looks horrified. He holds a loose fist to his chin, then shakes his head. Kent leans an elbow on his lamplit desk and sips from a mug as he pours over more CCTV footage. He sets the mug down by the computer keyboard and stares at the flat screen monitor. A van drives into shot on screen. He freezes the footage and takes down business details emblazoned on the side of the van. He walks across the car park with Chandler.
The CCTV from the car park in Fenchurch Street shows the van. It's from AC Maduro Health and Safety. Now, they're a small medical supply company. The MD is a Mr. Maduro. He's stopped all his vans, but he's not happy about this at all.
If such a terrible murder had occurred in one of my vans, I would have noticed. The vans are clean. There is no blood.
You have to just bear with us, please, sir.
I need my vans back on the road. We supply organ transportation, not just body bags and rubber gloves. And we have urgent medical transfers.
Over here!
How long is this going to take?
Positive signs of blood all over this van. We've got a murder scene! I want a thorough search of this van.
Balding, heavy-featured Sanders visits Buchan in his cell.
What do you want?
I asked to see Joe.
Well, you've got me.
So I am the lowest of the low now.
I don't have to be here, you know. What do you want?
Please.
Stand back.
Ask Joe, has the killer sent the kidney yet? Mary Boosfield's kidney? It's bound to be the next step. He'll post it to someone involved in the hunt. Someone he regards as his nemesis.
Sanders retreats from the doorway and the door is closed again. Forensics officers are in full force at Maduro's depot.
Who was driving this van night before last?
I'll have to consult my records. I have my own filing system, but it's a bit complicated.
Sir?
Kent examines some white plastic bottles.
These were found in the back of the van.
Get in touch with fire investigation. Chase up which accelerant was used at the fire on Wilkes Street.
Sure. Oh, sir.
A forensics officer holds a polystyrene box marked human organ for transplant. A hand posts a small brown parcel through Miles's letterbox. His son delivers it to him at the breakfast table.
It's for you, Dad.
Have you got his pen, Jamie?
Images of an organ being wrapped. The parcel leaks thick crimson blood.
Please stop and get ready.
Out, out, everybody out, out!
He evacuates his children. A flashback of a bloody organ being removed from a corpse. Next time.
We've got 2 days until he copies the murder of Mary Kelly.
This murder could happen anywhere, in any flat.
The next victim will have long red hair, right?
Get tactical over there, we'll meet you there.
ITFC audio description.